Hungarians are proud, brave, merry, passionate people and good fighters. This is how Jácint Rónai, a mid-19th century proto-psychologist, the pioneer of national characterology, more precisely one of the first analysts of national stereotypes, describes Hungarians in his essay about national characteristics. His intention in doing so was to contrast these qualities with such unfavorable attributes as barbaric, violent, cruel, unreliable, and arrogant, used to designate Hungarians since the time of the Byzantine Emperor Leo the Wise. Rónai's writing, which came out in 1847, was drafted at a time when the Hungarian nation hadn't yet overcome its most decisive traumatic experiences, influencing to a large extent the building of its national self-concept. Nevertheless, the publication also mentions some disparaging features of the nation's mentality, such as the inclination to prodigality or melancholy. Rónai saw the motives lying behind the latter in the loneliness of the Hungarian people doomed to extinction amid their German and Slavonic enemies. The motive of the threatened nation surrounded by German and Slavonic enemies goes back to Johann Gottfried Herder's theory. His prophecy that the Hungarian language will vanish forever because of its foreign language environment caused the Hungarian intellectuals of the 19th century a constant angst which seemed to be impossible to overcome. On the one hand, it made Hungarians renew their language. On the other, it generated a whole mythology of the destruction of the Hungarian nation. The battlefield at Mohács became the symbol of Hungarian fate. There, the Hungarian troops suffered a crushing defeat from the Turkish army, and the country itself lost its independence for the next 400 years. Mohács was depicted in poems and paintings. The maze of a nation at the mercy of fate has influenced Hungarians to this day. The two national anthems learned by all children at primary schools contain it too. Some political analysts have proclaimed the autonomy of the citizen's action, the primacy of the modern citizen's personal enterprise, independent of national fate since the middle of the 20th century, but all in vain. Though Zoltán Kodály belonged to the modernist sphere of the turn of the century Hungary, he was extremely concerned with the Herderian prophecy and Hungary's future. He devoted several compositions to the myth of Hungary's fate. He composed a choir piece on Károly Kisfaludy's 19th century poem Mohács in 1965. Another late example is his Zrínyi's appeal, written for mixed choir and baritone solo in 1955. Kodály compiled the text of the composition from the military work on military science by Miklós Zrínyi, a 17th century Croatian Hungarian poet and general, and used the title of the writing, Ne bánsd a magyart, Don't Hurt the Hungarians, as a motto or rondo theme. The mythologeme of the nation's death, as well as the enemies of Hungary, constitute the central part of the libretto, although it is full of self-accusations and other symptoms complexes of the general national paranoia as well. At the time of the writing, Zrínyi's appeal was interpreted as a hidden political message against the Soviet oppression, presumably in harmony with Kodály's aims, who wanted to achieve the same effect again as his main work, Psalmus Hungaricus, did 30 years before. The composition written for baritone solo consists of shorter sections, following Baroque models. Essential elements of Johann Sebastian Bach's passions, such as fugues, chorales, and turbas, but there are also lament-like arias. The Baroque melodies formulas are combined with melodies resembling Hungarian folk songs or historical songs. Making use of the similarity of the two styles, Kodály incorporates into the piece a melodic line of the national anthem. The quotation has symbolical meaning, as the text of the quoted line is about the Hungarians' affection for their native country. The piece ends in a long amen in D major. Such conservative Baroque music-like elements would have been unimaginable in Hungarian music after 1956, when composers started to orientate themselves towards post-serialism and American experimentalism. Nevertheless, Sándor Szokolai, who became one of the symbolic figures of modernity with his up-to-date Hungarian operas in the 60s, began to emphasize his commitment to Kodály. He composed a cantata in memory of the galley slaves in 1975, based entirely on Baroque musical elements. The use of Baroque stylistic elements, such as the chorale, the counterpoint, and the motoric movement of music, is paired with Hungarian rhythmical melodic turns. The construction of the cantata follows the build-up of Zrínyi's appeal, as it contains shorter sections with turbas, chorale choruses, fugues, arias, and, at the end of the composition, a closing amen. Szokolai's cantata doesn't deal with politics openly. The selection of the text compiled from the work of an unknown 17th century poet found in a Lutheran codex is decidedly global. It is about oppressed people, mentioning also the daughter of Zion. It is an explicit reference to the Hungarian Zion, symbolizing in Hungarian Lutheran poetry the nation threatened by enemies. Szokolai's turn towards this poetry and Bach's style must have been due to his newly found religious orientation. He started to proclaim his commitment to the Lutheran confession at the beginning of the 1970s and regarded it as his task, I quote, to confess it publicly, end quote. He was involved in the work of Lutherania, one of the biggest choruses of the Hungarian Lutheran Church. This practical and spiritual involvement made him change his musical style. This change of style can be observed in Libellus Ungaricus, another of his cantatas in 12 short movements written to the religious text by Péter Bornemissza in 1979. The work contains two essential elements of Szokolai's Ars Poetica. One is that it follows directly Bach's style. In the sixth movement, entitled About the Devil, he starts, however, using all of a sudden 12 notes in a way which is alien to Bach's style, following naively an old tradition in which the tritone appears as diabolus in musica. Dissonant music stands for a contrast to the harmonic word, for the negative side of life. Thank you. Rabbi's use of 12 notes involves, however, another hint. It is a reference to György Kurtág's work, The Sayings of Péter Bornemissza, 1963-68, composed 10 years before, based on the same writer's religious text that face ruthlessly the devil in us, which represented for Szokolai's and Kurtág's generation modernity in music. By paraphrasing Kurtág's dissonant music in his Bachian cantata, Szokolai takes his stand against modern music. It is a decisive step towards the refusal of modernity's primacy. The other significant moment of Szokolai's work is the title Libellus Ungaricus. Hungarian composers, including Szokolai, had a predilection for playing with the titles of two significant works in Hungarian music history, Kodály's Psalmus Hungaricus and Bartók's Cantata Profana. Libellus Ungaricus refers evidently to Psalmus Hungaricus. György Kósa composed a cantata under the title Cantata Humana, and Ferenc Farkas wrote Cantus Pannonicus. For that matter, the use of Latin titles belongs to the same tradition. On the one hand, it refers to Kodály and Bartók, and the early Hungarian culture in the other, which was basically Latin and not Hungarian. This is why Ferenc Farkas gave his cantatas titles like Aspirationes Principis, Vita Poeta, Turris Hungariae, or Lajos Vas composed his Matthias Rex, István Vántus his Fragmenta Bátoriana. These compositions form a separate group of works, and not only by virtue of their titles. They all belong to the genre cantata or oratorio and are about the heroes of Hungarian history or the glory and courage of the one-time Hungarians. These heroes are always men, even in the cantata of the only female composer, Erzsébet Szőnyi, and the active characters are almost always baritones, such as Rényi in Kodály's choir, which suggests that thinking about Hungary or Hungary's future is man's task. The text investigates the fate of Hungary and the heroes devoting themselves to their nation, as well as analyze, interpret, and scourge Hungarians in exactly the same way as Rényi does in Kodály's work. The nice movement of Szokolai's Libellus Ungaricus, entitled On Hungary, represents this type paradigmatically. It is a funeral march following presumably the death of the nation, which is paired with a flagellant text. It tells us that God left Hungarians because of their sins and pride. Other composers, however, dealt with the problems of the nation and modernity in a much more complex way than Szokolai. Ferenc Farkas, for example, who had been his teacher at the Academy of Music and was more than 70 by the time, tried to identify himself with the heroes of his cantatas and wrote operatic scenes a la Verdi in his compositions. This can be seen in his Aspirationes Principis, 1974-75, which is about Prince Ferenc Rákóczi II, who led an uprising against the Habsburgs at the beginning of the 18th century. Farkas forms some dramatic apices into a movement, such as the moment when the prince sees the victims of the triumphant battle, or when his adherent, Kelemen Mikes, writes a letter about Rákóczi's death. In Farkas's cantatas, Hungarianness appears in a really sophisticated manner. He never boasts of being Hungarian. In Vita Poeta, his cantata about Janus Pannonius, the great Renaissance poet of Hungary, the young poet mentions his native land, Pannonia, when writing about his studies in Italy. At this point, Farkas, who studied in Italy in the 1920s, consciously identifies himself with the poet. He uses a melancholic soft G major rising from the more dissonant environment of the movement.
Yes,
tonality appears as the symbol of the native country, in this context, the object of the poet's and the composer's desire. The search for this homely motherland was much in the focus of the Hungarian composer's interest. To pursue this homely, comfortable tonality makes these compositions part of a workgroup concerned with the formulation of the question, what to do with modernity? The question seemed extremely timely in the 1970s, when after 10 years of modernization and economic progress, Hungary lost impetus and a serious crisis emerged, quivering fundamentally the compromise with the communist regime. Composers normally raise poetic and not political questions. Is modernity, which implies dissonance in this case, suited for expressing the feelings and anxieties brought about by the uncertainty of the future of the nation? Can and should the sentiment of the nation's imminent death felt in the 19th century and perpetuated by Kodály Zrínyi be worded with the means of 20th century modernity? The question caused a desperate inner struggle for Zsolt Durkó, who was, in the eyes of most Hungarian musicians, a representative of Western modernity. Having studied with Goffredo Betrassi in Rome, he was the first to bring the latest compositional techniques to Hungary at the beginning of the 60s. He rejected the fashion of neo-styles, as he put it in 1992, I quote, "I don't want to say that it is impossible to write music springing from modal harmonies. Even a C major can be composed. I'm not prudish in this respect. But if retrospection becomes a permanent state, music gets more or less backward-looking and inevitably weary." End quote. Durkó's reference to the C major chord is telling because in 1982 he ended his Széchenyi oratorio in an E major chord. The oratorio concludes with a Bachian choral. Zsolt Durkó's turn towards neoconservatism coincided with his identification with István Széchenyi, one of the greatest heroes of Hungarian history, a 19th century aristocrat who was intent on modernizing Hungarian society. Following Széchenyi's example, Durkó wished to participate in public affairs and be useful for Hungarian society. As far as Széchenyi is concerned, he stood for deliberate progress, the step-by-step construction of a modern Hungary. His ideal was continuously criticized by Lajos Kossuth's radical concept of progress and was overridden by the revolution in March 1848. But the occasion Durkó received a commission for had nothing to do with either Széchenyi or Kossuth or that polemic. It was the 100th anniversary of Zoltán Kodály's birth. An eyewitness of the world premiere believed to see a connection between the Széchenyi oratorio and Zrínyi's appeal by Kodály. He detected parallel sections in both texts, for example, the Hungarian's appeal to other nations or the symbol of the nation's death. It is true that Durkó compiled the libretto of his oratorio from István Széchenyi's writings on economics, quoting sometimes merely words or expressions from the original. Even if he didn't want to create a straightforward narrative, his selection of text passages follows the traditional Hungarian mythologem. Hungarians are at the mercy of fate. They will waste away due partly to the enemies surrounding the Hungarians and partly to the Hungarian sins. The two-part oratorio consists of 12 movements. There are choral and solo movements as well as orchestral intermezzi. The movements appear to be a kind of snapshots grasping a moment. Aleatory is of crucial importance in them. It represents the death of the nation in the eighth movement, coro dramatico. While the chorus sings, már késő, it is too late, that is, it is too late for Hungarians, and refers to Mohács as a symbol of the Hungarians' tragic fate, the chaos of modernism begins to take hold at the whole musical process. Only the gentle solo of a cimbalom, another traditional symbol of Hungarianness, is capable of putting an end to the loss of order. Finding our Hungarianness allows disposing the chaotic modernism. The cimbalom always appears at crucial points in the score. There are other traditional elements as well that participate in establishing the affirmative character. In addition to the last choral movement ending in E major, the sixth movement also tends to stress hope. The music depicts the allusion to dawn, worded in the text. The continuous upheaval in music expresses how the sun rises, a typical Kodályan solution. The use of such traditional solutions as means related to content and not as colors would be unimaginable in Durko's earlier modernist work representing Western post-serialism. Nevertheless, Durko tried to find a way to express his own struggle with modernism. Similar to Sándor Szokolai and Ferenc Farkas, he attempted to oppose the reevaluation of the past traditions and the national self-concept of the 19th century to the seemingly destructive character of modernity. His experiment suggests that destructive modernism is the reason for Hungarians' fate and failure, and the showdown with it, with the modernity, will bring us a prosperous future. It proved to be an illusion. The prosperous future somehow evaded us. But it is another story of nationalism. Thank you very much.